Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around, by ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, the IOA Run the City 5K, the world's best office party, coming to San Diego Thursday night, June 15th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've sent out over 14,000 grants to help challenged athletes stay in a game of life through sports. And, of course, you can check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes. And, as always, Endurance lives here. One of the top professional women triathletes in the world. Her name is Lisa Roberts, and she joins us from her beautiful estate in Arizona. Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. How are you?
I am wonderful. So, you grew up in Illinois.
I did, yes. Rural Illinois.
So when you were a runner, but your high school didn't have a team.
We didn't have a cross-country team. We had a track and field team,
yeah.
And I wanted to run some extra and run cross-country, and we did not have one of those.
So what'd you do?
So I ran for 1 or 2 years, I think. I kind of started to create my own. So I ran as an individual or unattached, if you will, for a year or two, and then by the third year, I managed to rally up a couple of the girls to give me enough to make ourselves a team. So we had five the next year, which qualifies as a team, and there we went.
I love it. So you weren't just running, you were sort of organizing as well.
Yeah, you know, just trying to round up, you know, any, you know, poor souls who would come and run with me.
So you end up at SIU Edwardsville, and did you run there?
I did, yes. Now, that was definitely something that wasn't planned, and one of the high school track coaches knew the coach at SIUE, and kind of talked to him one day, unbeknownst to me, and sure as you know, I got a phone call from him saying, "Hey, would you like to run with us?" So I said, "Sure."
How fun is that?
Yeah.
And what did you specialize in there? Was it cross country and track?
Cross country and track, and 1500 and 3000 were my events in track.
What did you like better, the track or the cross country?
I like track and the 1500 on the track.
Yeah. And what, PR?
My PR, and that was 4:33,
I believe.
4:35, I can't remember which one it was.
So out of college, you end up going and get your MA down at Landscape Architecture at the University of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And when did triathlon come into your world?
It came in a year or two into while I was getting my master's degree. There was another lady in our program who came from San Luis Obispo, big triathlon town, and she kind of egged me on a little bit into trying one. Now, I was still kind of running a little bit and running with a lot of the local clubs here and doing some road races, but just not really feeling that same, you know, highly competitive feel that you get when you race NCAA sports. And so I was looking for something else, and, I'm only 21 years old, I think, at this point in time.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, there's got to be more.
Right.
I can't be done already. So, she convinced me to do a triathlon, and so I went and bought a, you know, used bike that was probably too big for me. Kind of started showing up at the pool, trying to ask people, you know, how do you do this? And there you go. Next thing you know, I'm in a sprint triathlon here in town.
And how'd you do in your first sprint?
I did really well, and I loved it. The one thing, and I'll never forget this ever again now, is I forgot to put my race number on during the run portion. So I come across the finish line. I have no idea who I am because I don't have a number on.
Right.
So I have to continue running through the finish line, back into transition, grab my number, and then come back around and finish again. So
that's great. That's one of those lessons you go, okay, I get it now.
That's right, and I have never forgotten my number since then.
So how long was it before you decided, okay, I'm pretty good at this, I'm going to turn pro?
You know, it was a couple years into it. I was, first of all, still just doing it for fun, doing a lot of the sprint distance ones, and just really soaking up all the information I could about it and just enjoying it. And then I got a couple years into it and started, you know, winning my age group a little bit more and a little bit more, and kind of got that itch, you know, to go a little bit further, a little step further. And I would have to say probably the icing on the cake is when Leanda Cave moved here to Tucson several years back. She kind of, you know Leanda, you've talked to her before. She won't lie to you. So I figured, all right, I'll ask Leanda if she thinks I've got a good shot at doing pretty well. And so I asked her, and she was more than, you know, accommodating with it and thought, yeah, you should do that. So that pretty much was, you know, the straw right there. I thought, okay, if Leanda says I can do it, then I probably can.
So when I look at it, and it seemed like you got into the long distance. You realized fairly quickly that the long distance was where your skill was?
Yes, absolutely, especially with my strength in running.
So when I look at like 13, 14, 15, 16, I'm like, okay, somebody's going, I better do a lot of Ironmans in a short period of time to figure this thing out. Because you did, like in 13, you did, you know, Los Cabos and France and Canada and Arizona. You know, you did like four fulls in 1 year. I'm like, what the heck? And then the next year, I think you did five.
I did. And I think in the whole calendar year, so it's five sort of in a racing season, within that calendar year, it was six, with Kona being the sixth one.
Right.
And I'll never do that again, ever. I don't endorse that.
Wait, you know what's interesting? We were just in Boston, and I was interviewing this guy, Mike Wardian, who's the type of guy who realized fairly early in his career that, you know what, I can run a lot of marathons and not lose much. He ran the Olympic trials, and I think it was 2012, ran 2:21, and the next day in the regular Houston Marathon ran 2:31. So he realized he didn't lose much. When I look at it, you know, in 2013, you're seventh in Arizona, second in Canada, fourth in France, third in Cabo. You in the same thing in 2014, second in Cabo, fifth in Brazil, third in France, third in Lake Placid, and then, you know, fifth American and 20th overall at the Ironman World Championships. Did you find that the more racing you did, the better you did?
Yeah, oddly enough, that's kind of how it started to go. And it wasn't really my plan, but it was just that. And I think I was starting to, like you said, figure things out a little bit more. And so, you know, each race, I figured out one more piece to it and another piece to it, and you know, then one other thing would go, and then I'd figure out this piece, but then I would bring that one back up. And so, yeah, the more I raced, and I noticed I wasn't getting very fatigued with that, oddly enough. So I managed that pretty well. But, yeah, I was just, you know, learning more and getting better and getting better. So for me, it was a great way to really, you know, make my mark in the sport.
So was 2014, was that your first time doing Kona?
Yes.
Yeah, so you finished, you know, fifth American, 20th overall. And I always tell folks, people talk about the heat and the wind, but really the main deal in Kona is the competition. The depth of field is, you lose five, all of a sudden you lose your focus for 5 minutes and you're out of the race.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is that what you found there? That, man, I've raced a lot of races, but, you know, in the other races I do, there's three, four, five, maybe seven, eight people who can be competitive. Here, there's 50.
Right, yeah, and you know, one or two minutes is the difference between, you know, maybe 10th place and 20th place.
Right, between making money and covering your expenses and ending up in a hole.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and what did you come away with from that experience? What did you gain from that experience doing that first Ironman World Championship?
I think, you know, a lot of what I gained from that was really trying to just get a hold on. I know everybody says this too, that, you know, you have to kind of think of it as, you know, it's just any other race. And in a lot of ways it is, but in a lot of ways it isn't. And I think you have to sort of put yourself in there, in that situation with, you know, all the hype and all the talking and all the people everywhere. You really have to learn how to manage your energy levels in that kind of scenario. Because it's constant, you know, 24/7, you know, people running up and down Elite Drive and riding, and this, and it's so easy to get caught up in that and waste a lot of energy. And so that was what I learned a lot in that first year was, okay, I need to, next time I come, manage my time and my energy a bit better, because I just got caught up in the whole thing. And
it's easy. It's easy to do, because you get over there and you see people at all times of the day riding out in the lava fields, and you're like, well, if they're doing it, You know, and sometimes it's people who've done really well, and you're going, well, if they're out there, I guess I should be out there, too. Rather than doing your own thing, you start getting caught up with everybody else.
Absolutely.
Then in 15, we start seeing something pretty cool where all of a sudden, you know, when you go to Ironman Chattanooga and you're second and you get the run course record. And then Mont Tremblant in third and the run course record. And Ironman France second with 2:54 marathon. So it's like your body is really able to sustain the swim and bike and still run well. Was that a major change between, I mean, your running has always been great, but all of a sudden you're setting course records and things are changing. How much of that do you tie into the fact that you were doing road races and crits and becoming, you know, a really competitive cyclist?
I think actually that played a fair bit into it. Not only that higher speed, higher intensity work, you know, whether it was through crits or bike races, but also some of my run training shifted a little bit more to, you know, faster paced, higher intensity, and not so much, you know, base building, if you will, or a lot of miles, because I'd done, you know, how many, 15 Ironmans?
Oh, my God, in 3 years. You're a crazy woman.
Yeah. So shifting a little bit more to that sharper, faster stuff, and I just really just saw that drop, because before then I was, you know, I was running still pretty decent marathons, 305 to 310, somewhere in there, but hadn't really gotten close to or gone underneath that three-hour mark very much. And then there was just every Ironman. It was, I mean, and surprising to me even was, you know, everyone was like 3 hours on the nose or 301 or just under 3 hours. I mean, it was just, whether I was feeling like I had a good day or a bad day, I was like, I was pegged right into that pace, and it was locked in. So I'll take it.
So and then in 16, you went to one of the races I've heard Chrissy Wellington tell me about you know, Optuez and how spectacular that event is. Talk a little bit about, because a lot of our listeners, they know the Ironman events, but they don't know about Optuez and how special that event is.
That is the most epic race I think I have ever done. Now, I've done, for the last few years, I've been lucky enough to be a European cycling guide for a company called Riley Cycling Tours. And so I have spent many, many weeks riding all those different climbs right there in and around Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of experience with those climbs. So they were as familiar to me as the climbs are here.
Right.
And even. But to put it all together in a triathlon format and race them was something completely different all around. I was really worried about the lake water, which...
It's cold.
Cold. It wasn't as cold as I thought it would be. You know, I was really worried about that, just, again, coming from Arizona. Anything that's cold just freaked me out.
I don't blame you.
So that wasn't as bad as I thought, but I tell you what, I mean, it was to the point where, you know, the last climb of the day, you know, your third and final climb is Alpe d'Huez before you even have to run at the top. And it was almost laughable. It was so hard.
Wow.
Trying to climb up Alpe d'Huez, you know, it's the afternoon, so now it's gotten warmer, and you're just tanked from all the other climbing that you've done.
Yeah.
And almost laughable at how difficult it was, but in the same token, you're thinking, this is just the most epic thing ever. So you just keep it to push forward.
Well, and then you have to get off. I don't think I remember seeing Fignon or any of the other Eddie Merckx getting off and running after they got to the top of Alpe d'Huez.
Exactly. Yeah.
How was that? And how long was that run?
It's a half marathon, roughly.
Okay.
I think it was 21K. So.
God. And then the other, you also raced last year. You got to do one of the 70.3 races in China and got third down. What was that experience like? Because obviously Ironman is investing big time in China. I think they did 2 70.3s last year, and they're going to do 5 this year.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like for you?
I had a great time racing there. For that one race, at least, that I've experienced in China, it had that feeling of when triathlon was first starting, or at least whenever I first got started in triathlon. It's so new there, and the people there are so, you know, they're just soaking up all this information about what is this about, you know, what kind of gear are you using, why are you doing that, you know, and it was so great because I got to talk to and show a lot of people, you know, what I do and why I do it, and I'm hoping teach them a lot. And, I mean, even during the race, there was people, I think we had the most first-timer triathletes doing that race in Xiamen. And, I mean, there was a guy in tennis shoes, flat pedals, and khaki pants riding his bike during the race. And
I love
and
that.
I love it. I mean, I thought, gosh, this is great. This is what triathlon is about. People getting out there and giving it a go, whether they've got, you know, all the gear or not. They're just keen to try it, and I loved it. I loved every bit of it.
That is very cool. And so then you you also had, 16th in Kona, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so from year one racing Kona to the second time, what'd you gain from that?
This year's, or this past year's Kona was a little bit, I mean, even though it was an improvement for me, last time I had raced, a little bit of a disappointment to me. I had gotten sick a couple days before the race, which is another lesson learned, I think, from this year, is that as much as you can kind of keep track of your own stuff, I mean, trying to keep yourself healthy, especially when people start coming in from all around the world, carrying who knows what from, you know, what different airplanes they've been on, you have to be really careful with that. And so it was a bit of a setback, but so that was another lesson learned in there for Kona for this past year. The next time I get there better.
And I was going to say, I mean, after doing 4 and 5 Ironmans in a year, last year was almost like, Kona and Texas. It was like, this is sort of a, you know, this is a cocktail weenie year. This is, you know, I'm just going to. But meanwhile, I love the fact that you were second at Pan Am Champs, right, 70.3,
mm-hmm.
fourth at South American Champs, 70.3. So you're using the speed, and then you're third at the Ironman North American Champs in Texas. So you're using the speed from those 70.3 races and from the bike racing you've done in the past, and obviously you're mm-hmm. running, to transfer over to faster Ironman races.
Absolutely, yeah, and it works out really well, the timing, especially with the bike racing that goes on here in Tucson and Arizona. It's all very early, I guess, what most people in the rest of the country would think, because, you know, we're racing in January and February and March are a lot of our main races. After that, it starts to get a little bit too hot for us doing races, so it's perfect timing for me to really work on that kind of speed.
Now, so are you still doing any landscape architecture work, or you're doing full-time triathlon?
Full-time triathlon right now, yeah. I've stepped back from doing that full-time, which I was doing up until 2015, middle of 2015.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Right.
So
I stepped back from that.
I was reading, I think it was one of your blog posts where you're talking about, you know, sometimes it's hard to get motivated to get out and train. So what I like to do is I'll just put my swimsuit on, and eventually I'll feel a little silly sitting around the house in my swimsuit and be like, well, I better go for a swim, or I'll put my helmet and my bike shoes on, or I'll put my running shoes out and be like, or shorts out and be like, you know what? There's a reason I got this stuff on. I might as well go do something with it.
Yes, absolutely. And I just did that again today. It was kind of slugging around a little bit, like, I need to get to the pool. And I did that very thing. I went and I put the swimsuit on. I thought, all right, well, just step one. Let's put the suit on and see where that goes from there.
Love that. So what are the plans for this year?
Plans for this year? Again, obviously, always looking to go to Kona again. So
yeah.
I'll start with St. George here in a couple of weeks, and probably do a couple of the other regional championship races. 70.3 and Ironman along the way. I've had a little bit of a later start this year than I normally have because I'm just healing up a stress fracture in my foot. So,
you mean you got a stress fracture for doing 15 Ironmans in 3 years? Wow, that's really a surprise.
I know. They called it an overuse injury. I don't get it, Bob.
What the heck? How could that be overuse? 5 Ironmans, five. You know what's so funny about that is, there is not a marathoner, a elite marathoner on the planet who is doing 5 marathons in a year. And maybe somebody from the Ukraine, or every once in a while, maybe a Kenyan or Ethiopian who's, you know, sort of trying to make a few bucks on the U.S. circuit. But any elite athlete, they're not doing 4 or 5. Now, a number of those years, did you need to do that many to try to get to Kona? Or was it, I need to learn how to race these races?
You know, it was a little bit of both. I was trying to, at the time, I think you could score 5 full Ironmans for points to get to Kona. And so that did, that was part of the plan, was, okay, use the biggest amount of point races I can use to see how many points I can get to go. And the other thing was just kind of, you know, building up that knowledge bank and how these things work and, you know, working your way through things that go wrong or things that go right.
So one of my favorite people on the planet and a guy who certainly understands getting athletes ready to maximize their talent is Brett Sutton.
Ah, yes.
And you're working with Sutton now?
I am, yeah. I just started working with him at the end of last year, and super thrilled about it.
Yeah,
he's a great guy.
He's very special. And what I like about Brett is he understands. I mean, Chrissy Wellington was trying to become an Olympic triathlete, and he basically said, "You're going to Ironman Korea," and then you know, and she won that, and it was like, "Okay, now you're going to Kona," and then she never lost. Right. Sometimes he recognizes talent in an athlete long before they do.
Yeah.
What have you learned from Brett so far?
I've learned from him overwhelmingly patience, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
And especially, you know, working through the stress fracture, which I think in his mind, he was going to throw my butt in the pool, you know, all off season anyway. So it didn't really matter that I had a stress fracture because, you know, he's like, "I know you can run, so we're not worried about that.
Right.
What you need to do is work on your swim." And so, and patience is what he's taught me the most. When I start to kind of get a little bit freaked out or nervous or I'm looking too far ahead, he brings you back to reality and says, "Okay, where are we at right now? And this is where we're at, and let's go from here. Well, if that didn't work, then let's, you know, take a step back, let's reassess, and now we'll move forward." So that's been the biggest thing, and I trust him implicitly with that.
Well, you should.
He
certainly is a great partner, right? He's
mm-hmm.
he's going to help you maximize your potential. That's what he's done over and over again with Nicola Spirig, from Daniela Reif to Chrissy Wellington. Everybody he's worked with has obviously succeeded. So you've made yourself a great choice. How has it been different for you than were you training with a coach before? Or were you on your own?
I was. Yeah, I was training with Jimmy Riccitiello was my coach before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's a local Tucson boy here.
Exactly.
So everybody knows him.
Yes.
And he was great as well. And yeah, I've just been before him. I was with Torsten Abel. So
uh-huh.
I've had the three coaches. Each one I've had for several years at a time. So I tend to pick a coach and stick with them for a while.
Well, and that's important because you sort of have to trust. And like mm-hmm. Brett says, you got to be patient. So
yeah.
When you look back at the races you've done, what do you look at one as maybe meaning more to you, more important to your you know, your perception of yourself as a triathlete than any other?
Yeah, the year that I finished second at Ironman France, second to Kate Snow by just a little over a minute. I think the gap was closing pretty well on that run. Obviously, she's another, you know, epic runner, so it was
yes.
no easy task. But that last, you know, 10, 15K where I'm trying to close in the gap, and really having to dig down pretty deep, I learned a lot about myself and a lot about how much further I could push myself beyond what I thought I could before. So I think for me that was a real turning point. And to get that close to winning, you know, such an iconic race, which I will go back to and I will try to win that race again, it was a turning point. And I thought, okay, I can do this. You know, when you kind of see that little glint of light, and then you want to go after it more. So
well, and it's look at you were fourth in 13 there, and then you were third in 14, and then in 15 you got second. And
yeah.
ran 2:54.
Right.
So obviously there's something about France that you like.
Yes, yeah. I love that country, yeah. They're so into sports there, especially cycling, especially triathlon. So when you go there, you just feel like you're one of them. I just love it.
Did I just see that Nice is going to be the host of the 70.3 Worlds in 2019?
Yes, I'm so excited.
Did they call you and say, "Lisa, we're trying to figure out where to move 70.3 Worlds, and you have any insight for us?"
Yeah, I may have given a suggestion. Yeah,
that's very cool. So, Lisa, when you talked about China, one of the things that was cool is I could tell that you love sort of the old school aspect of it. That here's a guy and who's wearing wearing pants, and he's wearing he's probably got a belt on, and he's got a bike with a high bars and a koozie and all that type of stuff. You seem to like the fact that hey, we want to get new people in the sport. It isn't just about you racing. It's like, how do we grow the sport? How do we get new people to love the sport?
Yeah. And I think a lot of things like, breaking down different barriers. I think us as professional athletes, getting out there and making ourselves a bit more accessible to those who are starting to get into the sport. And, bringing it up slowly. I mean, I know there's a lot of pressure to when you start doing triathlon to, go get yourself a, $15,000 bike and a, this and a, that. You have to immediately get all the bells and whistles. And I'm a big proponent of, look, let's just work with what you've got right now and just ease your way into this, because I think there's a lot of extra pressure that comes on with, getting all this gear, and then, you're not even really sure how to use it quite yet, and your fitness isn't quite there yet. So I think there can be a lot of confusion going on, and, I don't know if that would turn people away. So I'm more about, let's just work with what you've got. Let's borrow and cobble together a few things, do what we can, and then I think the love of the sport grows from there, actually.
I agree with you. So are people reaching out to you for a little help? Because I hear you were, you got into this as an age grouper. Next thing you know, you're a pro.
Yeah. I have people all the time asking me, and I'm always open to helping people out, figure out. I just had another email come in, another lady doing her first Ironman in Santa Rosa, and just wondering nutrition-wise, what she should eat and what she should try. So I gave her a bunch of suggestions and, have her practice a few things. And, people are always asking about different gear to try out and this and that. And I'm always, well open to helping people out.
What I love, and here you are, somebody who's done so many different Ironman races, but I'm sure there have been those days, like in Nice, when you get second, and you have the 2:54 marathon, and you go back to your room, and you're like, I'm going to write down everything I ate, exactly when I ate it, exactly what I did, and then you go to your next race, do all of that, and it doesn't quite work the same way.
That's exactly what happened, too, yes.
Is that right?
That's the beauty of it. That's it. Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Just when you think that you've got it all figured out, it's different. And the more races you do, obviously, you get fitter, but then there's also fatigue that comes in with that. And then, obviously, conditions are always different. So I liken it a lot to, my other love of being a landscape architect.
Yeah.
Every project that I've done over the years has been different. It's all the same basic thing, but you're dealing with a different, client and a different plot of land and different needs. And I love that about it. It's no two projects are the same, just like no two races are the same.
And no two training sessions. Everything is different about it. Now, are you one of those people, do you train mainly on your own? Or are you a group person? What do you like to do?
Just because schedule-wise, I'm mainly on my own, but I'll jump in with some cycling groups in town or some swim groups in town, and I've got a handful of running buddies that I'll run with when our schedules kind of combine. So,
now,
a little bit of both.
With the swimming, so you had that stress fracture. Did your swimming improve during that time while you were sort of forced not to run?
Yes, absolutely, and I think that's what I've probably needed to do for years, but just never wanted to. It took a broken bone to finally get me to focus on my swim. I'm a lot stronger in the water now, and the times have dropped. So I'm certainly happy about that.
Isn't it funny? Because I think what happens is when obviously you've become a really good cyclist and a great runner, and the tendency is, I'm going to focus on that, and then my last workout of the day will be the swim because it'll be sort of recovery, and I'm not really going to be high intensity. I'll just get it in. But then when you can't run, it's like, okay, this becomes a workout. It's funny. I was just talking to Lionel Sanders about this. All of a sudden, the swimming has become becomes his primary workout, which means just that's where the focus is. And, gosh, I'm getting faster. Wow, what a surprise. Were you surprised that all of a sudden, is my primary workout, I'm focusing on this and I'm getting better?
Yeah. It was one of those things where it's a surprise, and it was also, kind of going, oh my gosh, how many coaches and people have told me this over the years? And, you kind of know that, that's what I really should do. And you always think, it was one of those things that's like, let's make the list of all the people I need to go back to and say, okay, you were right. I should have listened to you.
Exactly. But, you know, the cool part is it just makes you, it makes you so much more dangerous, because now all of a sudden people look around out of the water and there you are. And it changes everything, right? If you if you're catching these folks earlier on the bike, then all of a sudden it's game on, and they have to change their game because they don't want you around when they get off the bike.
Yeah, that's right. I'm looking forward to that.
Love that. Hey, Lisa, thank you so much for taking time. Pleasure to get the chat, and best of luck at St. George in a couple weeks.
Great. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Lisa Roberts has been our guest again. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel, six-time Ironman triathlon world champion Dave Scott, the IOA Run the City 5K, the world's best office party, coming to San Diego Thursday night, June 15th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes. Definitely subscribe to our newsletter. And as always, endurance lives here.